Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. It's great to be back here.
It is.
Welcome back.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Sherry, you've been a Zen student and teacher for over 25 years.
This is true.
This is true. And you've just come out with a new book, which is called When You're Falling, Dive.
Yes. Acceptance, Freedom, and Possibility.
Acceptance, Freedom, and Possibility. Mm-hmm. And I sense that those three are related.
Yes, they are. They are, absolutely. We have, you know, it's an interesting thing. People, as a culture, we believe that the way to be powerful is to resist what is, to pit our will against life and make life sort of knuckle under to our desires. And most of us find that as the years roll by, we just get more and more beaten up and life just goes right on the way it is.
Yes.
So what I've discovered over the years of paying attention to how life works is that when we accept what is, we're freed from, if nothing else, our own resistance, rather than having all of our energy go into maintaining a posture against life. The energy is freed up and it's available to us. And when we're not holding a particular position, we find that there's just infinite possibility available to us.
Yes.
So, when we're falling, which we always are, mm-hmm. Just turn it into a dive. Just let go. Go with life. And, then it sort of moves into that judo sort of image,
uh-huh.
or even dancing, when people are,
yes.
actually dancing together rather than someone is leading and someone is following.
Uh-huh.
We share a friend who does improv,
yes.
and one of the exercises that he has us do is to do movement together so that nobody could ever tell, including us, who's leading and who's following,
uh-huh.
that the movement happens together simultaneously.
Yes.
And we can be in that relationship with life so that as,
uh-huh.
life unfolds, we unfold. And it's like a beautiful dance that can go in any direction.
Right.
Otherwise, we're just locked in our resistance with our feet planted, dug in, straining, using all of our life force to try to hold ourselves in one place. And again, the only thing that happens is that we find ourselves worn out,
yes.
and defeated by a process that has the potential to be enlivening and exciting, exhilarating, thrilling.
Energizing.
Energizing, which life can be when,
yes.
we are moving in sync with it rather than trying to stand against it.
Yes. And as I hear you talk about acceptance, I'm thinking not sort of lying down and letting life,
right.
roll over me.
Right. There's nothing passive about it.
Yeah.
It's the most exciting possibility that we have in that way that you have to be present for it. If you know what we love about, we were talking about The Matrix right before we went on,
yes,
the air.
The movie.
And that idea of needing to pay such close attention, being able to just move in any direction depending on what's coming at you. You know, we love those scenes,
yeah.
In movies. What was that? Dragon, crouching tiger, dragon
hidden
thing?
Something.
Yeah. it's the same sort of process. Or Jackie Chan, who I,
yes.
just adore. It's like, how could somebody do that and not be killed, even in the just making a movie?
Yes.
And the level of presence that's required so that you know what's going on all around you and above you and below you, and you're just dancing there on the balls of your feet, ready to go in any direction that,
yes.
is demanded. It's just a thrilling way to be in life, and that's possible to all of us, not just the extraordinary people like Jackie Chan or people who have a lot of special effects. making it look like they're,
yes.
actually doing something that they,
yes.
couldn't do if their lives depended on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, as you're talking about it, it's a way of being with life where we just need to be there.
Yes, you
we can't prepare.
Oh, you can't prepare. You can't anticipate. And you certainly can't do any post-mortem, second-guessing. If you do, you're just going to be creamed. Because,
exactly.
while you're thinking about what you should have done a moment ago,
yes.
That beam slaps you alongside the head, and there you are.
Exactly.
So it's just letting it all go. Everything that's gone by is gone by.
Yes.
And everything that's ahead of us, we have no idea. There's only this.
And there's a freshness to it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A sense of, I don't know what's going to happen, and maybe I don't want to know, and it's exciting. And
yes. Yeah. Well, when we get the hang of really being present, we don't want to know what's coming next, because any information about what's coming next is going to take us away from here. And this is everything. This is beyond plenty. This is
exactly
more than our wildest dreams.
Yeah. So when we tune into it.
That's right. When we're actually here for it.
Yeah. Exciting. Cool. So, Sherry, you're going to be away for a couple of weeks?
I am. I'm going to Africa.
Great.
Yes, very excited about that. And I'll, of course, come back with lots and lots of information, I hope, and stories about what we encountered there and about the possibilities that we are going to create. Can you create possibilities? I don't know
why not.
For a retreat center there to be able to bring people over to go on retreat and to do working meditation with the school project that's there and help get these kids off the street and into schools and raise their life expectancy beyond the age of 20 and like that. So
great.
Very excited about that.
Great. And you'll be gone a couple weeks.
Yes, I will.
Coming back late June.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
So if you're listening today, don't call us today. Wait till Sherry's back.
Yes.
And we'll take your call then.
Yes.
Great. All right, Sherry, we have some email questions here.
Okay.
Actually, a bunch of them. Dear Sherry, if likes and dislikes keep us at the center of the universe, why don't our wants and needs do the same thing?
Well, they do. Everything that is about me is designed to keep me at the center of the universe. Now, the thing that people get confused about is, is it possible to want something, to need something, to like something, to dislike something without it being a keep me at the center of the universe process? And certainly, I mean, we have certain things that, for whatever combination of reasons, we are particularly drawn to. Maybe you like the color green. I really like the color red. Somebody else likes the color orange. It doesn't mean that letting go of the kind of attachment to our wants and likes and dislikes and desires turns us into what I call tapioca pudding or mashed potatoes approach to life. That egocentricity does that to us.
Yes.
As we let go of that desire for things to be a particular way, as we open up to the way things are, and again, as we were talking about earlier, the possibilities inherent in that, then we're freed up to enjoy whatever is there. We can even enjoy not liking something.
Mm.
It's perfectly
incredible.
It's perfectly possible to not care for something at all and enjoy the process of experiencing it and that not liking it. Mm-hmm. I was up in Murphy's this morning, and I had a radio interview.
Yes.
And, of course, they're scheduled way in advance.
Yes.
And so I scheduled it for quarter to 10. I would be in my office to take this call to be on the radio, and I drove up to my office, and they are whatever that you call pruning the trees in town. Okay, so they're cutting these huge limbs off of trees, so they're just chainsaws roaring everywhere, and then they have those trucks that they throw these big limbs into, and there's I mean, it sounded like World War III right outside my office, and I thought, now, isn't this life in action? I looked at that. Where shall I be? That's the quietest phone line that I can get to, because you want a really clear phone line and not a lot of noise, you know, because that noise will come right over the radio.
Yes.
That's why we're closed into this little tiny
studio,
soundproof room right now.
Yes.
And here is just bedlam going on outside.
Yes.
And I had to laugh, because now if I were attached to this being a certain way, if I thought I'm in charge of this, this is up to me. It's my fault. I should feel bad because I should have known if I wanted to go down that road, I could have made myself just unutterably miserable over the whole thing.
Yes.
But in fact, I'm not in charge of any of it. I lay it out
the
way.
They don't call you up.
They don't call me. They don't ask me anything. And I did my very best.
Yes.
And it didn't work the way I thought it was going to. Any other day of the year, my odds would have been really good.
Yes.
But this day, no, it doesn't work. And I have to appreciate the humor of that.
Yes.
So I can think, on the one hand, this poor woman is just going to be miserable because she was so concerned about the quality of the phone line anyway.
Oh, she was.
And yes, of course. And then, because it's her radio show, right? It's not my radio show, but she was really concerned about it. So I want her to have, I want her to feel good about her show and the project and all of these kinds of things. And it just didn't work. So on the one hand, it's not my choice. I don't want it. I can enjoy the humor of it. But that doesn't mean that I would say, oh, yeah, I'm really glad that this happened. Poor woman, it's going to ruin a radio show. That's not the approach at all.
Yes.
I really wish this weren't happening. If I had any choice in this matter at all, I would make it be different.
Yes.
But I don't, and I can't. And so I can enjoy being present to all of that arising at the same time. And in that way, life is what is the word for it? It's endlessly amazing, astounding, entertaining, exciting is a word that we use a lot. It's just, it's beyond our little human ability to try to grasp.
Uh-huh.
Life is huge, and it's living, and it's living us, and it's just rolling along, and we can have the full experience of a human being in life. Doesn't mean I'm always I always need to be smiling, happy. I can accept life and be really unhappy with the way it's going, and I can be enjoying the experience of being an unhappy human being.
Yes. Wow. Can you say that again, that last sentence?
Yeah. If I have a great loss in my life, I'm going to experience it as a loss. I'm going to be sad. Now, the difference is, if there's nothing wrong with that, then I don't have to suffer over it. I'm just sad when life is sad. And there's a certain enjoyment in that. I could spend all of my life not feeling anything, not participating in anything.
Yes.
Would I want that? Would I really want a loved one to die and I would just feel nothing? I would just smile along through it? I don't idealize that. Right. I idealize being a fully plugged in, connected human being and perfectly fine with whatever life brings.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating. And as you were talking about with the noise and the trees, I was thinking about dualities, which we often talk about as, I like this, I don't like this, I want this, I don't want this. And it sounds like the approach that you're talking about is sort of seeing both sides of that duality and recognizing it for what it is.
Yes. Yes. And to realize that whatever I'm holding on to about that is just what I'm holding on to. So I'm absolutely starving. I race up to the restaurant and there's the close sign on the door. And, it's not that I, burst into peals of laughter because, gosh, isn't life a hoot? I can realize that what I really want to do is beat the door down and get in there and just make my own food because I'm really hungry and I was really counting on this. And then I can also enjoy, that restaurant. There was no reality in which that restaurant was open. Only in my mind was that going to happen. And how we get caught up in our projections about how life is and how it's going to be. And then when we're confronted with how life is, can we enjoy that process and enjoy the realization that, whoa, I'm just not in charge here, and enjoy being reminded that when I go unconscious, there is that ability to suffer? And can I enjoy being awakened so that I don't have to stay asleep and make myself totally miserable. If I can, and, you know, even if I can go so far as to allow myself to stand there and jump up and down and stamp my feet and scream, no, 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 no,
no,
then, you know, there's just – life is just not a problem.
Life
so
is not
I
a problem.
Don't know why we idealize this flatlining, nothing, I'm affected by nothing. Well, I do know why, because people don't – we don't have a lot of models for living life fully and enjoying all of it.
Yes.
So again, I go back to my – one of my 2,500 favorite Ram Dass quotes, which is the one about, I love you as much as I have ever loved anyone in my life, and I don't care if I never see you again. I mean, that's it.
I love that quote.
Yep. I am fully, fully filled with love in this moment. And this that's complete right there.
Yeah.
I don't need to hang on to that and drag it to death in the dust.
Nice.
If nothing, if this never happens again, great. It's happening right now.
Yes.
So that sort of fully participating, holding nothing back, holding on to nothing, no ideas about how life is going to be. Again, if we're willing to suffer, suffering is not a problem.
Yes.
It's only when we are resistant to what life brings us that we move into that, there's something wrong with this, I don't want this, I am miserable.
Yes.
Orientation to life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whew. Wow. That's a lot to cover.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. You can pick us up in the Bay Area at 90.1 FM and over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Coming up at 5:40 p.m. today, we have the news, followed by DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian at 6 p.m. And at 9 p.m., we'll have the Bot of Euphony. Sherry, I was thinking, as you were talking about that, this phrase, the suffering that ends suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that's what you were getting at, being willing to accept whatever's going on with me.
Yes. So if I suffer, what might a person suffer over?
What wouldn't they suffer?
I guess we can suffer over anything, huh?
Yes.
Say it's when I feel rejected by someone or something in life.
Yes.
And I spend my entire life trying to avoid that experience. Now, of course, if I spend my entire life trying to avoid an experience, what it means is I live in that experience my entire life,
yes,
which is a really important concept to grasp. So I get it that I'm going to periodically have this experience that I think of and call rejection. So I'm going along, and what I've realized that trying to avoid that just perpetuates it. So I'm going to open myself to it. I'm going to go along fully being who I am and participating. And when that rejection experience happens in my life, I'm going to be open to it, present to it, as wide awake as I can be, and just see what's going on with that. That's my plan.
Wow.
So it comes up and it happens. And because I've made a commitment to stay present with it, then I go into it. Now, the fact that I'm present to it doesn't mean it's fun. I still have all that same belief and investment, and I hate those feelings, and I hate what it means about me, and I'm miserable. Maybe I'm crying. I'm feeling sorry for myself. Maybe I hate others, or whatever it is that goes on with me. But I'm willing to go through it,
mm-hmm,
and I watch all of that stuff happen. And then the next time I go through it, and the next time I go through it, and the next time I go through it, and every time I'm willing to go through it, it's changing. It's no longer as believable. It's not because I'm not resisting it. It passes through very quickly. It's like the image I just had was being in the ocean, being in the surf, and because this happened to me quite recently, as a matter of fact, getting out and having the wave pick me up and throw me down, and then I try to get up and it throws me down again. It throws me down again, and it wasn't that special. And then realizing that that's what was going on, and no longer fighting it, and then starting to jump into it instead of, because of course, if I would try to stay in one place when it hit me, boom, down I go.
Flattened.
But to jump into it, then sometimes I would go under, sometimes I wouldn't, but I was participating with it now.
Yes.
And so, again, my lack of resistance starts making me a part of it. Now I'm watching all these beliefs. I'm watching the self-talk. I'm watching what goes on in my body. It's being familiar. I'm no longer thinking and believing that something is going to happen to me that I won't be able to stand. It's going to get so awful that I just won't be able to survive it, because I've been through it consciously all these times.
Yes.
The power of it, the power it has over me, is beginning to slip away.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, I don't suffer over it at all. I can get to the point of saying, another rejection. You know, I've had plenty of those. I may not even call it that any longer, because I realize that's not what it is. You know, somebody's living their life and they forgot I existed. That that's hardly a rejection.
Right.
So as that, as we are willing to suffer over something, the suffering really goes away, because the suffering exists in our resistance, not in the whatever it is. Suffering is not in the rejection.
I see.
Suffering is in my hatred of it, my resistance to it, my dread of it.
Yes.
That's where I suffer.
Yes. Wow. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So we could just go through life without resisting anything.
Oh, yes. It would just be so
Heaven
intelligent,
forbid.
Wouldn't it? It would just be such a wonderful, wonderful thing. On the drive down today, I was listening to a fellow who I unfortunately, I didn't find out who he was, but he has written a book on dictators.
Uh-huh.
And he's interviewed a bunch of recent dictators.
Wow.
Now, how do you...
Found them in exile?
Yeah, exactly. Do you just call up a dictator and say, you know, could I come over and talk to you this afternoon? But apparently he did, because he talked to a surprising number of what the world might see as kind of scary people.
Uh-huh.
And every one of them, to a person, denied that they had done anything that was inappropriate, even though they may have killed millions of people, that each one of them, this was the part that astounded him, each one of them felt victimized.
Wow.
Every one of them felt powerless against the circumstances of their lives to do anything other than what they did under the circumstances.
Wow.
So I don't know if I've said this on this show, but my favorite... my favorite quote recently, again, I wish I knew who said it, but that in every relationship, everybody is fighting for the victim position.
Uh-huh.
So there we have it.
In every relationship, one person is fighting.
Everyone is fighting for the victim position.
Role.
So if you look at our country, I think that's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Everybody is fighting for the victim position.
Yes.
You know, life is hard for me. Hey, I'm only doing this because I'm being forced into it. You know, this is a difficult place that I am, but life is pushing me. You are making me do this. Mm-hmm. That's why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so to realize that it's perfectly possible for us to just go along accepting whatever life gives us, not needing to move into that victim role.
Yes.
Can you imagine? Because when we are not victims, we don't need to victimize.
Yes, which is what I was thinking.
Yes, yep. Which is what we get with the dictators, right? You are victimizing me, and so therefore, I need to victimize you.
Yes.
And sometimes millions of people in a country will victimize one poor individual who then has to retaliate in these rather unfortunate ways.
Yes.
So for each one of us to realize that it's not a requirement, that we can certainly accept life. And once again, you know, that image of a river, we're going down the river and we're going with it. And if we are truly with the river, then we can just bob and weave and avoid and move around exactly as the water does. You know, the water doesn't actually crash against things.
Uh-huh.
You know, it comes up against something, it moves around it, which, of course, is what makes water the most powerful force in nature.
Yes.
Because it just continues to come up against and move past, come up against and move past, and eventually it'll wear away anything.
Yes.
And life, in that same way, is wearing away our resistance.
Wow. If we allow it.
If we allow it. That's the suffering that in suffering, if we can just sit still, stay with it, watch it, let go of what we're holding up against it, then life will just wash away the karma. It's usually in Buddhism talked about as burning away the karma.
Burning away karma.
We sit still with it. It feels like, oh my God, I can't stand this. It's horrible. I'm going to die. I'm going to pass out. My nerves are coming out of my skin. And then we survive it.
It's gone.
Happens again. We survive it. Happens again. We survive it. Pretty soon, it's not even believable.
Wow. Cool.
It's a good deal.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We have a bunch of email questions here, Sherry, and are you ready for the next one?
I absolutely am.
All right. Dear Sherry, I was recently on retreat in a silent environment. One of the interesting things I noticed coming up a lot for me was the issue of projection. I feel like shouting that every time I see the word projection. Projection is big. I found myself creating very elaborate fantasies about how another person there was feeling towards me, even though I had virtually no information to back that up. In this instance, I decided that a guy in this silent environment had, quote, special feelings for me, and that if only we could talk and be together, we might have a heart connection, fall in love, who knows? As soon as this story began in my head, his presence was a great distraction for me. I found myself looking for ways he might be secretly communicating his great love for me.
Oh, haven't we all been there?
Mental telepathy.
Oh, so painful.
Yes. When I pay attention, I can see there's this part of my personality that always likes to go into romantic fantasy. But at the same time, I seem to be getting hooked by the question, well, what if, in this instance, it is true? Can you say something about projection with regards to the, quote, but what if it's true, hook? Part of me thinks that piece is really important. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and we know the part. The part, at least I know the part of me who would think that that was really important, and that is the part of me who wants to go on doing this.
Yes.
Right? Because that thing that we talk about often, we choose our beliefs over our experience.
Yes.
I believe that this is true. I keep having experience after experience after experience after experience that says it's not, but I still choose to believe it. Well, there are a lot of reasons for that, but most of them are because I get to suffer. If I actually got it, that, well, you know, it may be true at some point, but I have no experience of that. If I got that, I could quit running down that same blind alley over and over and over again. But there's no suffering in that approach of accepting my experience.
Yes.
So my response, of course, is, what if it's true? Well, if it's true, then I'll find out. You know, he really does adore me. And so probably after we're off retreat, now if it's one of the monks, then what if it's true? Well, it's a big so what, because this is a person who has committed himself to monastic practice. So it's not like he's going to sneak an email out next week. So it's, you know, that's true everywhere. So what if this married man is secretly attracted to me? Okay. So what? He's married. So it doesn't matter. He's a monk. It doesn't matter. What am I doing having these kinds of fantasy relationships with people who are completely unavailable to me? That would be a good question to ask. Well, maybe he won't be unavailable to me. Maybe I could actually snag him away from his wife or snag him away from his commitment to his spiritual training. Well, wouldn't that make me special? So then maybe he's not a monk, and maybe he's not married. Maybe he's actually available. And so maybe next week he'll contact me. Mm-hmm. That'll be next week. Mm-hmm. And then that'll be next week. It won't be now.
It won't be now.
It will. Then it'll be now.
Yes.
But right now, what if it's true? There is it. What if it's true? It's irrelevant. It
yes.
means nothing.
Yes.
I am here on retreat. He is here on retreat. End of story.
Yes.
And of course, now people can hear all sorts of moral stuff in what I'm saying. And there, that's not the point of it at all.
Yes.
The point is to see how life works. I'm in this moment, but I'm not in this moment because I'm fantasizing about something that could happen, although it's never happened to me. It could happen. It could happen. So I better leave this moment where I am and fantasize about a time that does not exist and a possibility that I have no evidence of mm-hmm. except in my own made-up world.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, the what if it's true is something that needs to be nipped in the bud immediately
mm-hmm.
because it is simply a semi-plausible way of getting me out of the present.
Yes.
So, you know, I suspect that you secretly hate me. And I watch for evidence of that. And I try to find out and all. Okay, mm-hmm. And I'm really not finding anything outside my own projections that's going to confirm that.
Yes.
But what if it's true? Well, it is true in the sense that I am making this up in my own conditioned
uh-huh.
mind. And if I continue with that, I'll be able to suffer over it deeply.
Endlessly.
Yeah. And I can make things up and suffer over them anytime I'm willing to give my life force to that kind of activity. But why would I want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
What if it's true? Well, if it's true, I'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I'll know.
Yes. Yes. And as you were talking, it occurred to me that the point of all this dialogue is sort of just to maintain this dialogue.
Exactly. It's in my way of talking about it, your way of talking about it, it's to maintain the illusion of a separate
mm-hmm.
self. That's
mm-hmm.
all that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, the separate self, that illusion of a separate self, is maintained through fear, through ideas or stories of loss and deprivation,
mm-hmm.
Something's wrong,
mm-hmm.
All of those kinds of activities
yes.
feed that illusion of separation and suffering.
Yes.
So
don't forget urgency.
Urgency.
Oh.
Exactly. Urgency. But this is really real. So
and I need to act on it.
Yes, because I'm going to lose something if I
yes.
don't. There's going to be something awful that happens at any time we get into that stuff. It's egocentricity. It's
mm-hmm.
karma.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn to sit still. Now, talk about burning away or washing Ooh. Away the karma.
Yeah.
To sit still through that and realize that leaving this moment and chasing after that kind of illusion is as bad as life gets.
Yes.
That if
yes.
I can sit still in this moment and be with whatever is in this moment and be all right, be accepting, move into that heart of compassionate acceptance for whatever is in this moment, that's as good as life gets. So if it's important not to get confused over those two. Well, yeah, but what if this is really true and something awful happens? Well, if it's really true and something awful happens, then my best place to be is in this moment
mm-hmm.
in a heart and mind of acceptance.
Yes. Here, now.
Here, now.
And in the future, if and when, whatever happens.
That's right. And then, of course, the secret of that is if I'm actually here, it's not something awful. It's
right.
simply life.
Life, exactly.
And here, in this moment, I know that life contains old age, sickness, death, all kinds of loss, surprise, shock, all of the things that we see on the nightly news.
Yes.
I know that life contains all of those things as well as all the beautiful, wonderful things that I love and hope happen to me. So when I'm here, I'm not deluded that I can somehow, through magical thinking or some other process, avoid life as life is.
Yes.
All I can do is be open to life as life is and realize that that's what I am. And in that realization, be free to enjoy any and all of it.
Cool.
Yes.
Yes, and now we're getting back to the first email, I think.
Exactly.
Well, we always get back to the
we
same thing.
We always get back to the same thing, don't we? Because that's all that's going on.
Yes.
It's like,
I'm either here, accepting, living, enjoying, or I'm not.
Or I'm out there suffering, miserable,
right.
fearful,
future, past.
Believing that something is wrong. Yeah, it's really, it's quite straightforward. It's just that when we're in it, it gets very complex seeming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right, another email. Dear Sherry, I've been thinking about process versus content. How does all this relate to substance addiction? The 12-step programs require complete abstinence or withdrawal from the substance. Could you talk about this approach versus yours of working with situations in the moment and the idea that nothing is ever exactly the same? Surely acting out through abusing a substance, any substance, sugar, nicotine, food, alcohol, etc., is always, quote, exactly the same. Yes or no?
Well, here's how it plays out in my view of how life works. Mm-hmm. The ultimate addiction is the addiction to the illusion of being a separate self. So the ultimate addiction is to identity, to egocentric karmic conditioning. Mm-hmm. Every other addiction feeds that addiction. And what it's fed with, or if we want to move to another image, what holds that relationship together is self-hatred. Mm-hmm. So the only way for me to keep my little identity at the center of the universe is if it's really important to be there. And the thing that it keeps it there through importance is there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the wrong person, I'm doing something wrong, I'm bad, I shouldn't be this way, like that.
Yes.
Say, when I am not a bad person, when I am not evil and horrible and needing to be fixed or improved, when I'm just a regular old human being going along in life, I'm not at the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do things that prove that I'm a bad, wrong person, then I need to be beaten and punished, and that keeps that drama center stage. So for me, it's important to see through that process, because if I simply stop a behavior and the way I stop it is through abuse and self-hatred,
uh-huh.
I'll just replace it with another behavior.
Yes.
Because what I'm going for is the drama of that identity maintenance system. Okay,
yes.
So it can be something as simple as I no longer do that behavior, and I'm really judgmental about other people who do because they're threatening to me.
I see.
And then I get beaten for being judgmental.
Uh-huh.
So as long as we're locked into that self-hating identity maintenance process, it's just going to be one piece of content after the other. So
yes.
Then finally, now I'm completely pure as the driven snow. And what do I hear? You think you are so good. You are so superior. Mm-hmm. What makes you think you're better than? Did I say I was better than? Okay. But that's what the voice comes in
yes.
with.
Yes.
So seeing through that process is to me the most important piece of it, that anything will be used as an identity maintenance system as long as we're identified with an identity that needs to be maintained.
Wow. Wow.
So it doesn't matter. You know, in the spiritual world, it's been long pointed out that giving up what people think of as bad behaviors is not challenging. Giving up being a bad person, a lot of people are willing to do that,
mm-hmm.
eager to do that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't. What's really tricky is giving up being a good person.
Wow.
Because either a good person or a bad person keeps me at the center of the universe. Because if I'm a bad person, I need to be beaten for being a bad person and fixed and improved and changed. If I'm a good person, of course, I have to be watched because I'm arrogant and egocentric and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing, and could probably slip at any moment and slide right back into being a bad person.
I see.
But to lose interest in being any kind of person in particular, just being a regular
wow.
human being going around in life, doing the best that I can, sometimes meeting standards, sometimes not.
Yeah.
This does not keep me at the center of the universe.
Wow. That's fascinating. I hadn't considered it in those terms before, of people sort of willing not to be a bad person and yet not, I don't know how to phrase it,
being less excited
about not being a good person.
Yeah.
And just allowing life to come up.
Yeah. Nobody's
special.
Doing
the best we can.
That's all those, nobody going nowhere or whatever those images are. You know, nobody's special.
Yes.
Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, you know, everybody wants to be extraordinary. The most ordinary thing in the world is wanting to be extraordinary. It's really extraordinary to be willing to be ordinary,
yes.
to be just a person. Not better than everybody, not striving, not comparing, not judging. Just, you know, just folks, just regular folks.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Ready for another email?
I am.
All right. Sherry, in a recent radio program, you remarked that what we are after is mastery. I don't remember the word mastery appearing in any of your books. Would you say more about this?
Sure. I don't remember it appearing in any of them either. But then I realized just recently I was getting ready to be, I know what it is. I'm getting ready to do a public talk, and it's going to be on When You're Falling Dive. And I thought, you know, I need to read that book. I haven't looked at it since I sent it off to the editor. So, yeah, exactly. So anything could be in those books, and I wouldn't know.
Yes.
People will say, well, you know, you said blah, blah, blah. I just have to take their word for it because I wouldn't have a clue.
You know, I do remember mastery in the key near the end when you talk about being a tennis player.
Aha. Uh-huh. Oh, very good, very good. Mm-hmm. So the idea of mastery, of course, mastery is simply, now, people will talk about it as mastery over self,
uh-huh.
which has a really negative kind of an
yes.
image to it, because it puts us in that position of I'm a good person who's going to be in charge of myself, who's a really bad, shaky person who definitely needs to be watched all the time. And that's not what we're talking about with mastery. Mastery is another word for presence, for not being pulled off into illusion, not being deluded by what's going on, not being caught in beliefs and assumptions, not living out of conditioned mind. That's the mastery that we're talking about.
Mm.
And we have lots of people that we see in other walks of life that we can sense the mastery.
Yes.
Sports figures, particularly
yes.
when somebody is just head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yes.
And we sense that mastery, that extraordinary physical ability combined with a mental ability
yes.
To focus and stay present and never,
wow.
ever lose sight of who they are, where they are, and what they're doing.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Cool.
Yes.
Exciting.
Yes.
And in spiritual practice, we can approach that.
Oh, absolutely. And, we do it through awareness practice.
Yes.
People with that kind of extraordinary ability approach it in much the same way. They just have a different name for it.
Yes.
And so if you ever listen to a Tiger Woods or a Michael Jordan or
uh-huh.
someone like that talk about what they do and how they do it,
yes.
You can hear I see. That's, we talk about that as da-da-da-da-da.
Uh-huh.
So they don't have a system that it goes into
yes.
in the way we do, because what we do is awareness practice. And,
yes.
you know, for thousands of years now, people have been doing awareness practice, and they will say, okay, there are these stages, and then you get stuck in this, and then you go beyond that, and then you realize
yes.
this. And, you know, it's like taking steps along a path.
Right.
People can also just plop down somewhere on the path, and they know what they're doing. They can articulate the process that they go through, but they don't realize that it's something that other people have charted and mapped, and
yes.
And that other people who do an awareness practice can say, "Oh yeah, you're doing da 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 da."
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've had some great emails today. If you want to contact us, please send us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Sherry's going to be away for a couple weeks, and we'd love to answer your email questions when we get back. Sherry, can you leave our listeners with some homework for the coming week?
Yeah, well, the one that I really like is but what if it's really true?
But what if it's really, what if it is?
Yeah, what if it is? And so we can look at that through projection. We could look at it through all kinds of things.
Yes.
You know, I need to do this with my money. Somebody said that it's going to get worse. Can you imagine? What if it's really true and I don't do what they say? Or, you know, the price is going to go up on such and such. I need to do it now because what if it's really true?
Yes.
And so to begin to get a sense of the different places and ways in our lives that we are controlled by that fear of, but what if it's really true?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make a mistake. I could have, should have known better. And what if it's really true?
Yes.
So there could be great suffering in that if we go in that direction of what if it's really true and I will have made a horrible mistake, what else is available to us?
Yes.
Yeah, what if it's really true and I don't care?
So that's our mantra for the week.
Yeah.
What if it's really true and I don't care?
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
I was a friend of mine at I was at Book Expo America this last weekend, and this friend of mine, maybe I shouldn't tell everybody this, but I don't think they'll write their book before he does. He's going to call his new book, What If Nothing's Wrong?
What If Nothing's Wrong? Shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, of course, now, you know, he's going to have to deal with the questions about, are you saying that murder is not wrong? And, of course, that's not what he means.
Yes,
You know, what if the worst happens? What if the stock market is able to go lower?
Yes.
And you didn't do anything about it?
Yes.
And what if there's nothing wrong with that?
Wow.
What a notion.
Amazing. Great.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.